between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
Yay!
Yes! Well, there we are. We are back. Wonderful.
Thank you, bus people. It's raining there. Yes. We still got them out there.
Oh, yeah. It's a metal roof. And because we had lightning in the area, and I figured that was the best way to settle them down, but obviously that didn't work. So
settle them down.
Well, they're always rowdy. I mean, and the problem is, and normally on the wine show we give them wine, but tonight I got it mixed up because we were talking about Long Island, so I made everybody Long Island iced teas.
I have to take
a sip of mine. But anyway, and then I realized, oh wait a minute, this is a wine show. We're not talking about a Long Island iced tea. We're talking about Long Island.
Island
New York
wineries. Yes,
So we had to put them underneath a metal shed just to keep them quiet when it lightnings. They all kind of, oh, you know, what was that?
Keeps
them on their toes. Keeps them looking out for stuff.
Makes all the hair stand on the end. Yeah.
Yes. that's how we gauge how close the lightning is.
Well, that works.
If they go, if they light up or, you know, their hair stands on, then we know it's close. Let's see. So tonight, we are talking about Long Island, New York.
Long Island, New York.
Yes. And which is, you're going to tell us a little bit about it, I guess, as always. And we're going to have a couple of guests come on the show with us, and that's going to be really great. So we have individuals from Long Island, New York, Long Island area, or are they actually in Long Island? I'm not.
They're wineries. They both have wineries, and they're in Long Island. One of them, I believe, right now is in New Hampshire, though, and the other one is around there. So they're both Long Island. So,
well, we'll have them on in a few minutes, and the next one will come in about a half an hour. So. Take it away, Ron. It's always great to have you here and all of our listeners. Thank you all for listening to us, whether it's on archives or live. If you'd like to get on live with us right now, and it's 7 p.m. Eastern time where you're at on Thursday the 28th, then give us a call. 646-727-3235 is the number to call. I also said that during the intro, so it's kind of saying it several times now. So call us and get on the air.
And if you're not Eastern time, if you're Central or West, you can still call us.
It's a converter. 6 p.m. Eastern time, 5-something, whatever it is, mountain.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. 7 here, 6 central, 5 mountain, and 4 Pacific.
4:30, I think. Yeah, 4:30 Pacific time.
yeah, half hours. That's how they do it.
We're doing a lot. Yeah, here we go. And in Long Island right now, they have scattered clouds and 81 degrees and thunderstorms, it looks like, expected for later on, I guess. It's only 30%. 40% tomorrow and partly cloudy Saturday. And Sunday it's going to be clear, but it's going to be in the 90s. Wow, I didn't think it would get that hot up there, but it's amazing. But 81 right now in Long Island, so congratulations.
Well, that's about what we're sitting at right now, though, too, isn't it?
We're the same. Yeah.
With the rain going through and all that, yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Okay.
Long Island. The island. I've had people come into the winery and say, I'm from the island. And, you know, I mean, it's obvious with the accent that they mean the Long Island, not the the island, not down in Puerto Rico or Jamaica or Haiti or something like that. Not those islands, the island. Long Island, New York. It is located east and, basically east of New York City. down at the very tip of the state of New York. We started to talk about New York last week. We had a very nice speaker from Cornell University come and talk with us for a while. And he told us a little bit about what was going on in the grape growing and some stuff around the state of New York. And now we're going to divide it up into little cities here and little areas, not cities, but little areas, since New York has so many different growing areas. Long Island is going to be our first. We're going to start down at the very bottom. Long Island stretches east out of New York City, home of the Hamptons, which is, you see that quite a bit in different shows, TV shows and stuff talk about the Hamptons. That is the south branch. The north branch is where a lot of the wineries are, an awful lot of wineries. Long Island itself is south of Connecticut. You go straight north out of Long Island, and especially the wineries and all that, and you're going to be even east of New Haven, Connecticut. So it is, it does stretch out quite a bit in the ocean there. I want to talk a little bit quickly here before we bring on our first guest about Long Island AVAs. Long Island does have, three AVAs. The first AVA is first two was originally established back in the 1980s, the mid-1980s. That was the Hamptons Long Island AVA, and there was also North Fork of Long Island AVA. These were smaller ones, and then in 2001, the AVA of Long Island was established with the subregions of North Fork, Long Island, the Hamptons, and then Long Island AVAs. Long Island AVA consists of 749,000 plus acres. The grapes grown there are the vinifera grapes, the ones we're so used to: Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Chardonnay Musk, Merlot, Niagara, Petit Verdot, Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, quite a few of them. Area was established about 15 years ago, this current Long Island AVA. AVAs require that a minimum of 85% of the fruit used from the designated area within the border. So this gave people, instead of having to be just in the smaller designated North Fork or Hamptons AVAs, a chance to call it an AVA just as a Long Island AVA. So this is... has worked quite well for that. That was established in 2001. Our first speaker tonight is Ron Gorler, I believe. I'm sure he will tell me how it's really pronounced. From Herbis Family Farm Vineyard, or is he from Jamesport? I'm not sure. He is the Long Island Wine Council president, which is a cool thing. And so, Ron, are you there? No, he's not. He's in the green room. Let's get Ron out of the green room and get him on to the show here. Okay, Mike's on, and Ron, yes, are you there?
Yes, there I am.
Fantastic. I don't know. I lost you. You were in the green room for a while there, and couldn't get you out. Did you hear me mispronounce your name?
It's a girl. Girler.
Girler?
Girler. Yes. Say girl and add er.
Oh, Girler. Oh,
yep.
Well, thank you. I did the spelling threw me off on that.
We were just talking about that.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was just talking about it on the air there. You are with what, Jamesport Winery or with Herbis Family Farm Winery?
No, I am Jamesport Vineyards. My father started the business back in 1981, and are we on the air right now?
We're on the air. We're talking to people.
Oh, great. Great. Good job. From Jamesport Vineyards, my dad started the business back in 1981, and he was the fifth member of the area. There's now 51 members in our region that produce wine.
There are 51 wineries in Long Island?
Yes, Yes, yes. Wow. Hard to believe after 35 years of growth in our industry.
Well, tell us about, you are also the president of Long Island Grape Growers or Winery Association.
Long Island Wine Council, yes.
Long Island Wine Council. That's cool. I tell us about Long Island, the climate, what they grow. Everything.
Well, Long Island, was formed by a glacier, a million years ago. It sticks out into the Atlantic, 125 miles. It's basically a giant sandbar, and when the glacier carved us out, it left really a nice humus layer of topsoil, and then underneath that there's gravel and sand. So it's an ideal place to grow many crops. Suffolk County, the area in which all the vineyards are located, is the richest agricultural county in the entire New York State, and there's over 70 counties in New York.
Wow.
So it's just not vineyards that grow there, of which there's 3,000 acres of vineyards. But, there's a diverse group of things. There's nurseries, tree farms. There's horse farms. Obviously, potato was the king back in the 60s and 70s. There used to be 50,000 acres. They're down to 1,500. Our industry has about 3,000 acres right now. And Long Island's a very diverse farming agricultural community.
What happened?
I don't know. He went silent all of a sudden.
He went silent. He's still live here.
Hello, Ron. You went silent. Ron.
I'm still showing him on the line here. I'll tell you what. Let's hang him up. And you want to call him again?
Yeah, let me see what... that was... Ron, are you still there? Ron.
I just hung him up. Try calling him again. We'll get back to Ron there. Something happened. That was very odd. So we'll be back to him in a minute. While he's getting a hold of Jamesport Winery, y'all want to check that out. JamesportWines.com, a nice website for Jamesport Winery. Tells a little bit about everything and all that. We'll talk to Ron more in a minute here about Jamesport Winery and all that. But if you want to follow along on the website, it is jamesportwines.com. And we'll get him back here and have him tell us about his wines and what he's got and all that. I got an issue here. People, you know, so everything's an issue now. We don't have problems. We have issues. So we have an issue with this phone call here. For some reason, he cut off. They're in our green room. Maybe we can get him live here.
Technical difficulties. I think he's on now.
Okay, you back with this, Ron?
Yes, I was doing a great job of talking about my area. I don't know where I left off.
All of a sudden, you just right in the middle of it. We have no idea what happened, so we apologize for whatever the glitch was. I don't know, but you were talking about 3,000 acres of vineyards now planted there. It used to be a lot of it's funny because everybody that I talk to always tells me about how the potato fields used to dominate Long Island, and now it's vineyard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's really what's happened. And when you look at agriculture on a whole, the important thing about agriculture going forward is the generation. And if you don't have a generation, meaning, the sons or the daughters to follow it, an industry is going to die. And that's what happened to the potato industry. I mean, it's flourished for over 150 years. With all the settlement of the Polish and the Irish people that came over and planted potatoes on the eastern end of Long Island. But the generation started waning, prices of land rose, and then the kids, they said, well, it's a lot of work to run a farm. I happen to be second generation, And, you know, I have four kids, one son and three daughters, and, you know, I hope one of them wants to take it because that's, you know, what I'm working for, obviously. But my dad made it available for me to do. And, you know, the struggle is, like any business, small business in this country, is finding out how to make it profitable.
Right.
And agricultural is a very hard thing to define what is profitable sometimes because there's a lot of input that goes into it to make it profitable.
Yeah, without a doubt there is. And wineries don't seem to be a good good solid ground right now. I mean, we've talked to wineries throughout the country so far, and it seems to be pretty strong. And Long Island, I mean, it's just the way they're exploding up there, it seems to be...
You know, New York State is the third largest growing area in the United States, second to California. But, you know, there's Oregon, there's Texas, there's North Carolina, Virginia. I mean, there are places that are exploding with growth. And, you know, it's not, you know, just Long Island making wine. It's people, every state in our country makes wine of some kind.
Yes.
Which is hard
yes.
to believe, which is, you know, a great thing. I just read an interesting statistic about family-run wineries and how we just talked about the generation thing. In the next 5 years, there's going to be the biggest turnover of generations with wineries from second or third or fourth generations. And it'll be
wow.
interesting to see how that's going to affect our industry as a whole because, you know, like I say, it's a lot of work, but some of the family members might look at the financial profitability from getting out in terms of running a business rather than, you know, sitting there and trying to make it work. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 4 or 5 years.
And you mentioned that, too. I mean, that seems to have happened already in a lot of parts of the country, farmlands that have been sold out because developers have came in and said, hey, I'll give you so much. And they say, you know, why should I sit here and struggle every day to do this when I can just take this big chunk of change and go live peacefully by myself? And, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen to wineries or not, but that's an interesting fact that you brought up about the fact that it's turning over to the second, third generations now.
Well, I mentioned Suffolk County being the largest grossing income county in the state of New York. It is also, Suffolk County is also the leader in ag development rights being sold, which the townships out here are very progressive in buying up the rights to farms so that they don't turn over to developers. The East End has over 10,000 acres preserved. There's still 10,000 acres up for grabs. But the beauty of that 10,000 acres being preserved, it's going to give the next generation the potential to farm it. The question is, what is going to be on that farm to make it profitable so that they can farm it?
Yeah, and is the land going to be cheap enough to be able to plant cheap crops, or are you going to have to go with something like a vineyard or something where it's going to realize a better profit?
Well, you know, vineyards are a long-term commitment, and we've been doing this for over 30 years now. We're coming up on our 30-year celebration, and it is a lot of input. It is something that you have to have a strong stomach for, and you have to have somebody within the family that really is committed. I happen to be the committed one in the family, meaning I have five brothers and one sister, and none of them are involved in the business, but they sure as hell enjoy the drinking the wine. Excuse me for my French language there, but
I bet they do. Yeah. Okay, Ron, you can bring the wine.
That's basically what happens at family gatherings.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. I noticed on your website you had a highlight there, sustainable practices. Do you do organic farming or?
Well, you know, the organic movement is obviously huge across the country.
Right.
Certification for organics is extremely difficult because you have to have a three-year turn on it, which means you can't spray any restricted pesticides, insecticides, or herbicides on that property. And that is something, being in a maritime climate that we are, it's extremely difficult. We have a lot of humidity problems. And so what I mean by my feeling is that we actually, I'll take that back. We have one grower that's in the process of trying to become certified organic. This year was a very wet year, so they've ran into a couple of challenges because of the disease pressure. But sustainability really is what you can do to minimize the impact on the crop that you're farming, meaning how can I reduce my pesticide input? How can I reduce my fertilizer input? How can I reduce labor inputs? How can I, you know, do that so that I can be sustainable, which is basically being profitable.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I do everything. I don't spray an herbicide and I don't spray an insecticide. I do have to spray fungicides just because, like I mentioned, we're in a high humidity area. So I am doing my best part to minimize the impact on, you know, obviously the thing. And I think it ultimately affects the quality of the wine in the long run if you're spraying all of those multiple things throughout the course of the season.
It has to, I believe so also, yes. Tell us, you mentioned humidity. Give us a synopsis of a year in Long Island, New York. Highs, lows, snow, rain, all this stuff.
Well, as you know, weather has completely changed across the world globally.
Oh, without a doubt.
Long Island, like I say, sticks out into the Atlantic 110 miles. In 25 years, we've not had a hurricane, knock on wood, and we're always nervous sticking out into the Atlantic that far. The last time we had a hurricane hit Long Island was Gloria, which was 1986. And
wow.
So it was devastating. It was a Cat 3. And as you look at the storms, they're very strong. So what I'm getting at is that last year we had an extremely cold winter with a lot of snowfall, blizzard, like feet of snow on the eastern end. But after that, you know, we get into March and April. Our spring starts. Our season starts at the end of April, which is where the plants bud out. And then the growing season takes place all the way through the end of October. But in that period from May, June, July, August, we average about 3 to 4 inches of rain through the year. And we have temperatures in the 85 to 95 range. But we have one thing, humidity, because of all the moisture around us. And so it's a wet moisture. We're not a dry climate. We really love when the northeast winds blow through because it really dries things out for us. We have a prevailing wind, which is a northwest wind, which really dries us out if that blows. And then we have a really beautiful fall. We typically get Indian summers where we're get that nice dry air and we are able to harvest the grapes all the way through October and into November.
Wow. The late harvesting there, it seems like. Tell us about the grapes that are growing there.
Well, we grow 13 different varieties, and we've always been progressive in what we are growing, meaning we're always trying new varieties. We have the standard varieties, Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Cab, but, you know, we also have varieties such as Petit Verdot, which is a red variety, Syrah, which is a red variety. These are late varieties. There's a couple of individuals growing some Italian varieties, some Refusco, some Pinot Grigio. Once again, these are late varieties. So there's a lot of diversity where we are out on in the growing area. I mean, the standard varieties, obviously, like I say, are the Merlot and Chardonnay, and those are the bread and butter of what we do. But people's tastes have changed. It's you know, back in the 80s when we first started the business, Chardonnay was the big thing. Jess Jackson, yeah, who just passed away, he introduced Chardonnay to everybody, and it took off. And then the Merlot came, and then Sideways came, and then we had Pinot Noir craze. And, you know, where Merlot sales plummeted after that movie.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's I had a girl ask me one day, and she came in the wine room. She asked me one day, she goes, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure, why?" She says, "Is it all right to still drink Merlot?" Completely, yes. It was right after the movie, yeah.
But we are a maritime climate, and so I think we tend to do better. Sauvignon Blanc is our number one producer. We produce about 1,200 cases of Sauvignon Blanc annually. It's a great seafood wine. We have some of the freshest seafood coming in from Montauk and the bays and the local fishermen that we have there. And so lighter reds like a Pinot Noir tend to do well. Cab Franc, another great variety that's widely planted on the eastern end of Long Island. And, you know, it's developing. This area is only 40 years young. If you look at the entire world of wine, we are babies.
Yeah, well, that's
there are places
true.
That are. And so I think that's why the generation thing is so key, because if you don't have that next generation to say, okay, Dad, I want to do this, I want to take it to the next level. I took it from my father, and we've introduced things to the winery that he was not doing. And that's just the evolution of agriculture. You know, you have to constantly be adapting in order to be successful.
Oh.
I pray to God 30, 40 years from now, it's still wine grapes, and I hope there's double the amount of people out here producing.
How many acres do you have, and what do you, how many of each grape do you have planted in those?
The most widely planted grape on the island is Chardonnay and Merlot. Those are the two big ones. And then you'll look at Cab Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon. At James Wood Vineyards, we have a mix, like I say, of 13 different varieties, and you've kind of put me on the spot exactly how many of acres of which one they are, but I will say we're about a 50-50 split, meaning Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, and Riesling will produce about 50 tons of that, and then we do about 100 tons a year.
Wow.
So we're boutique-y, small. That 100 tons will get you about 5,000 cases in a really good year if everything goes right. And then the reds will be Cab Sauv, Cab Franc, some Pinot Noir, Merlot, and Syrah, and Petit Verdot also in there.
So basically you have the classic vinifera grapes then that are all grown up there.
Yes. Yeah, everybody's pretty much Vitis vinifera there. There's no hybrids or French hybrids or American hybrids grown on the island for production of wine.
Well, we talked to Cornell University last week, our introduction to New York, and he talked a lot about the work Cornell has been doing on grapes. So I guess it really doesn't affect Long Island at all, considering that they're working more on the cold weather grapes than anything else.
Who did you talk with at Cornell? You remember?
Mike, help me out.
Yeah, that was Chris Gerling.
Yeah, Chris Gerling.
Chris Gerling, yeah, he's a great guy, man. I know Chris
you
really
know
well. And, yeah. No, you know, like I say, upstate, it's a cold, hardy issue. Being the fact that we're on Long Island, we are pretty moderated by all the water around us. Our lowest temperatures get into the 20s. I mean, if we get into the teens for a little while, that's okay. You know, upstate has a different thing. They have to be near the lakes because of the slopes that they have for air drainage. And if the further they get away, the more damage they'll get from winter injury. I mean, they get into the single digits and negative numbers up there. And they've had wipeouts in the last couple of years because of that. And, you know, they have to grow varieties that are very cold sensitive. So they're constantly working on a breeding of different varieties to be more cold hardy. And that's great. I mean, that's what universities are meant for. They're the leader in helping us with disease management and insect management. I use Cornell frequently. They have guidelines. Cornell and Pennsylvania State University actually have guidelines out. They work together to help. So that makes my job easier and being able to, you know, do the research on the fungicides and things that they work with on a daily basis. So it's a great program they have.
So actually Cornell does help you then. It's not just in the grapes, but in all the other areas that they are.
Oh, no. They do. I mean, I'm hooked into what they call NUA, which is a weather system for the northeast regional weather setup. And within that Cornell, there's over 65 different stations throughout the state of New York, New Jersey, and you can click on mine, and you can. You still there?
Yes.
You can click on Cutchogue where our is, and I can literally see the weather and stuff that's going on, and anybody can get on the NUA site. It's called NUA.com, and you can see all the different weather patterns that go on, and there's disease management forecasts, and all these things that really make our lives extremely helpful. You know, so it's a blessing to have them.
Yeah. NUA, N-E-W-A?
Yep, NUA.com.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep,
that's
and they do apples and onions. They do, you know, vegetables, grapes, you know. So Cornell is, they're very well respected. We have the Cornell Cooperative Extension down on the eastern end of Long Island. The Cooperative Extensions, you know, they work with specialty crops, meaning grapes or potatoes or horticulture industry, and they have specific agents that just work on those crops to help us out.
You are president of the Long Island Grape Council?
Long Island Wine Council, yes.
Long Island Wine Council. What is the Long Island Wine Council and what does it do?
Well, Long Island Wine Council represents the 51 members that are currently there on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm the president. We have a board that basically gets together once or twice a month, depending on what's happening, and our main job is to promote the Long Island region to the rest of the world. We also do a little bit of lobbying for funding and issues like that, but our main focus is to bring people, bring tourism out to the eastern end of Long Island. And it's been in existence for 25 years. It was started by growers because everybody was a grower in the beginning. A lot of us didn't have wineries. We got into it because we wanted to make wine, but you obviously have to wait 4 years in order to get a crop.
Right.
In that process, so a lot of us were growers. And so it used to be the Long Island Growers Association, and then once we started all producing wine, we turned it into the Long Island Wine Council.
Uh-huh.
And, it's a great organization. It's a dues-based organization. We have a director on board, Stephen Bate, and it's once again to help promote the region and get awareness about Long Island wines around the United States as well as around the world.
The wine trails, is that just right in the North Branch there? Is that just a wine trail, or are there mini trails, or what do they do up there?
Throughout the state, there are many wine trails. There's the Hudson Trail, there's the Finger Lakes, there's, you know, the Erie Trail, there's Long Island Trail, and once again, those trails are all been set by the state of Albany to be recognized as the area in which each individual area has a representing body that people can travel through and get information and see and tour the areas that we have. You know, throughout
the state actually sets that up.
Yes, the state is, you know, there's a New York Wine and Grape Foundation, which is the main governing body for all the wineries across the state of New York. There's 230 wineries in the state of New York total.
Wow.
We are a small fraction of
51. Yeah, well, obviously,
But we are the largest concentration of vinifera varieties in the entire state, right on Long Island.
So the New York Winery Association really is controls most of it. Then that was going to be my next question, too. I always ask about government, the state of New York government. How does it treat you as far as winery and shipping and, you know, helping you out or hindering you and all that stuff?
Well, it's a very good question because, as you know, funding across all states has dried up.
Yes.
And every year I go to Albany and I lobby to many of the legislators on behalf of not just Long Island, but the entire state and the agricultural community. The primary revenue stream for the state of New York is Wall Street. I don't know if you know
that.
Second is agriculture. So it's funny how we have to fight every day for our rights to be able to farm. And Governor Cuomo, who's just signed in, he just passed a better wine bill, which is going to help us ease some of the restrictions. And when I say restrictions, we have to fill out a lot of paperwork today at a state and a federal level. And that paperwork is time-consuming. It's daunting at times, and it doesn't make our lives easier. So he just signed into a bill that's going to alleviate some of the headaches that we have, like shipping out of state. We have to file paperwork, and then it had to be shipped into the state. And it took hours to fill this paperwork out. There was nothing set up online to make our lives easier. So
they
basically have just wiped that out, which is great. But the New York Wine and Grape Foundation receives money. They're based up in Penn, upstate New York, and they are in charge of promoting New York wines. And within that, are all the trails are represented. And then within the trails, obviously each trail has its, you know, governing body, the Long Island Wine Council, the, you know, Finger Lakes Association, and so on.
Right.
And so we all lobby to make sure that as a winery, we are represented within the state in getting bills passed and making it available for us to have. And the funding is always the critical part because it takes people's jobs and offices to run and things. And if you don't have that in place, it becomes very tough to do any legislation. So last year it was cut. It was cut from the budget, the entire program.
Wow.
Which would have sent a lot of us into a tailspin. And a lot of us lobbied one upstate, and the governor, the current, not the current governor, but the ex-governor, allowed it to be put into the budget, which was we were very thankful for, so that it could be in existence. But it's never enough money, as you know, in life. It's just never enough to do the right thing.
At least it's there. That's a plus.
Yeah, it's, at least it's there, because it would have been a disaster to start over from scratch.
Wow. I didn't realize the you were having that many battles with the state in New York. Yeah.
Well, I think like everything, you know, everything's under scrutiny. And, you know, some people see, you know, when they sit up in their desks, they don't quite see the benefit of certain things. But, you know, you're looking at, once again, the third largest state in the country that produces wine. What
right.
don't you understand? Don't you understand the fact that we're the third largest and the biggest, one of the biggest, we generate almost $2 billion in revenues into this state. And you say that to them and they're like, really? I didn't realize that.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of wineries in New York. I mean, it just, you know, it's ridiculous that they would even consider trying to cut, you know, a promotion or anything to that. No.
Well, it's unfortunate, but like I say, they sit in desks and they sometimes don't understand those things.
Yeah, yeah. I've always said I would love to appear before every legislature in this country, each state legislature, and just for 1 minute say, wineries and wines are a multi-billion-dollar business. If you want part of it, quit battling us.
Yeah, quit battling us. You know, without getting too political here, because that's, you know, obviously not the objective here. But the states, all states, are under attack from distribution. Distribution right now, there's a care bill which was introduced.
I talk about it all the time. I'm a big advocate about fighting that thing. I'm always, you ask any of my listeners and they'll tell you how much I talk about. I dedicated a whole program. I got a hold of SaveTheGrapes.org. The president of SaveTheGrapes.org was on our program one evening talking about 1161.
And, you know, it was a good bill when it started out, like most bills. They're good until they start tagging everything into it. And, you know, and it was devised to keep alcohol out of the minors' hands, and I think that's great. That's a great thing to do. It's a great thing to have, and the Beer Association, that was, you know, the main push of that. But then a senator in North Carolina decided, let's throw wine into this thing.
Let's throw wine into this thing.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Wine is a completely different animal. And so that's where the fight came on, because if I have to go to a distributor, and if you've talked on your show, I don't want to keep preaching to the choir, but I think if I have to sell my wine to a distributor and then buy it back to sell it in my taste room, why am I in business? What's
exactly.
the purpose of me having the ability to run a business the way I want to if I have to go through a channel that's not going to allow me to make a profit? That's the real problem.
And that is the real problem.
There's two states, Maryland and Virginia, have adopted that bill, and it's causing real problems right now.
Although Maryland is fighting against it. Maryland just recently passed something that's getting away from that, though. We talked to Maryland not too long ago, and they're fighting against that. So it's changing again there in Maryland.
Well, but they realized once they did that what it did to the business, the distribution points. I mean, my objective is to sell 100% out of my retail room. I currently sell about 65% out of my retail room, and the other 40% goes through, you know, direct distribution. I don't have a distributor. I have a salesman on the road. And so my objective is to go to 80-20. So obviously that means that I have a stronger business model if I can do the 80-20 model.
Oh,
if I have to go the other way, there's no point for me to be in this business if that's the direction it's going to go.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that. Before I let you go here, Ron, I want you to give us the email address, location, all pertinent information for the winery, for Jamesport Vineyards, and everything else, so listeners out there can get in touch if they so desire.
Okay, well, Jamesport Vineyards, we're located out on the North Fork of Long Island. If you're going to come there, our address is 1216 Main Road in Jamesport, New York. Website is www.jamesportwines.com, And you can email us. We're on Facebook. We have live music out there on the weekends. We have an oyster bar, food bar, where people can come and enjoy themselves, get a complete experience when they're there. We have a great tasting staff. And, you know, I look forward to seeing anybody who's heard us on this radio station coming and meeting me, you know. I happen to be on vacation this week, but I will be there right after this week's over.
You're in New Hampshire now?
Yes, I'm on New Hampshire for a week with my family. It's the time of the year where I like to get away, and before the harvest starts, you know, where the vineyards are kind of in a sleep mode, meaning everything has been done and caught up, and now we're getting ready to go through veraison, which means they're going to start to turn color. And once they do that, we live in the migratory flyway where birds tend to love grapes when they change color, so we have to be there to net everything. So that takes place in the next couple of weeks.
Well, enjoy your vacation. Thank you very much for joining us on the program tonight. And if we're ever up in that area, we definitely will look you up.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. I appreciate being able to get on the show. And, you know, anytime you would want to come up to Long Island and do a live broadcast from Long Island, we'd love to have you.
That sounds like a great plan there, too. So thank you very much now, Ron.
Bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you, Ron.
Bye.
Thank you. All right. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And I've been tweeting some of this also. So as you're talking, I'm taking my notes and getting on Twitter and typing stuff. Because I've, for some reason lately, ever since I started doing that, I've been connecting to a lot of different wine. I don't know what you call them. People
wine
who are
accounts?
On Twitter. So
have you really? Oh, that's
the what?
Cool.
Yeah, it's I forgot what it was. But anyway.
Oh well.
I get cool. These notifications that they're now following you on Twitter. I was like, oh okay, maybe something's working there. So. Anyway, very interesting stuff, and it was great to talk to him. And we have our second guest of the day here, ready to go. So we can go ahead and bring him on. Are you ready,
Marco?
Are you ready?
I'm here.
You there, Marco? All right.
I'm
thank
here.
You for joining us tonight. We really appreciate that. Thank you for your patience too. There, I don't know if you heard too much of that. You are from. Castello di Borghese, is that it?
Castello di Borghese, that's the correct pronunciation.
Okay, Castello, that is Spanish, Italian?
No, it's Italian.
Italian, okay.
It means Castello di Borghese.
You being Italian?
I am, yep.
Okay, that's...
that makes it simpler.
It does it that. Tell us about Castello di Borgia, vineyard and winery.
Borghese, yeah.
Borghese, okay. Borghese.
Okay. The winery is the first winery established in Long Island.
Oh, wow.
Which is a pretty small region, so it's not a claim for worldwide fame, but in this part of the world, it... we started this winery in 1973. We planted the first vines in 1974 and 5. So we are the oldest winery established in Long Island.
Well, that's quite a claim to fame there. What do you grow there? What grapes?
We have all French grapes because. That is what was proven to grow better in this part of the world, given the soil and the climate. So the type of vines are categorized under the name French vinifera.
Right.
And we grow Chardonnay, we grow Sauvignon Blanc, Riesling in the whites, and then some reds, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Pinot Noir. That's our claim to fame, so I'm going to say it twice.
Well, that's good. How many acres of each of those do you have?
Of each, it's about the same amount of each. We have 7 or 8 varieties, as I told you, and we have about 30 acres that are planted. We are in the process of planting some more, so by the time we are finished with that process, in a year or two, we will have like 35 to 40.
Wow.
But the whole estate here is 85 acres, so we have plenty of room to grow.
Wow. It's, you know, I'm looking at a map of Long Island right now, and I'm looking at where you are, and you're just about in the middle of the North Branch there. It seems odd that you would have 85 acres available right there.
It's the total wine making region here in the North Fork of Long Island is about 3,000 acres. The total available is somewhere under 10,000 acres. So we are in a small area. You know, we like to call ourselves the Napa of Long Island, but in effect, we are so small that it's going to be a problem to make a dent in the world. But here in New York, We are known for good quality and things like that, so we try to do the best we can.
Yeah, well, it seems to be working well for you there. Do you water your plants? Will you have a drip system, or what do you use for watering of your vineyards?
Actually the vines that we have, because they were planted over 35 years ago, they actually do not need water in normal circumstances. It's only the new plants that need watering, and we have tractors that have some big containers behind, and we water what we need to do to make them grow nice.
So
in normal circumstances, we don't need watering. It's only at the beginning of the life of a vine that you need to water them on a regular basis.
Oh, okay. So after they've been established for as long as they have, they pretty much take care of themselves then.
They pretty much take care of themselves. The roots go down sometimes 2 to 3 feet. So there is always humidity and wetness down there.
Right,
which works also in the winter, because the frost line doesn't go below, say, you know, between 6 inches and a foot, so the roots are safe even in the winter when it's very cold.
Oh, okay. So these roots are going down as opposed to being spread out. Here in Florida, a lot of our root systems are not as deep as they are, you know, spread out to capture water and moisture and stuff. So
if they're planted right, and in this part of the, we have sandy soils here, and that's the discovery that was made, that the soil here, which used to be all potatoes, now it's sandy, and therefore the grapes grow, the vines grow well in this soil. And the climate that we have is also very similar to the Bordeaux region. So that's what we can do in this part of the world. The same thing that we plant here would not work in Florida, I'm sure.
No, they would not, because of Pierce disease more than any reason. And so we have a problem with that. When do you get bud break?
We get it around, give or take a week, around May 7th.
Oh.
It's either from the 1st of May to the 15th of May, that's bud break. Then we have the next big event happening is when the vines start flowering, and that's the beginning of a cluster. So that's another dangerous period for us, which is if it rained too much at that time, it would wash all the flowers away, which I'm only mentioning because it has happened to us.
Uh-huh.
And then the actual grapes start showing up sometime at the beginning of July. By the middle of August, the sugar starts building up in the grapes, so we have to cover all the vines with nets, and that will, because of birds and because of other wildlife. So
you have deer? Do you have a deer problem up there?
We have a problem with that. We would lose 50% of our yield if we didn't do that.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a serious thing, and everybody around here has to do it.
So you have to cover with netting every year then. Wow.
Every year. We have a special attachment to one of our tractors, and two guys and the driver can do the whole vineyard in about 2 days.
And how long do you have to leave it on before the birds leave?
That's at harvest we take them down. Actually, until after harvest. We raise them up.
Wow.
We raise them up to allow us to do the harvest. And then any time after that, you know, October, November, whenever, then we can remove them and save them for next year.
Wow. I never realized. Long Island, it seems to me like you have just a unique little small maritime warm climate there compared to the rest of New York.
It's very true. We, especially where we are on the North Fork, it's between two bodies of water. If you look up on the map, one is the Long Island Sound, and on the south of us, it's the Peconic Bay. So the reason that it works out here is that another big danger would be the frost. But being as we are in between bodies of water, the frost is not, usually doesn't happen. Now, watch it. I jinx myself. but in the 12, 15 years that I've been here, we did not have serious frost problems.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go on.
Around the middle of August, another 2 weeks, the red grapes start turning red, and the whites stay white, and then the process of harvesting comes about. Our first variety that we harvest is in the middle of September. By the end of September, we have done all the whites, and by the end of October, we do all the reds. That is always weather permitting and whatever.
What do you use? Wood, stainless steel?
We do both. The fermentation happens in stainless steel, and then there is the choice of either aging in wood or letting it be aging for a little bit in stainless steel. Stainless steel is neutral, so it doesn't do anything on the wine, for the wine. And it saves the wine for a very long time because it doesn't impart any flavors or anything like that. With oak, you have to be a little more careful because there is such a thing as being too much oak in the flavor of the wine, so you have to watch it constantly. But basically, the whites stay in oak for about 6 months at the most, and the reds stay in oak for anywhere between 2 to 3 years.
Wow. So you do use oak quite a bit. What oak
we
are you
use
using?
Oak. There is three types of oak. In big generic terms, the French oak is considered the best, but is also the most expensive. So, and then you try to lower your cost by using some American oak, which is also good, but it's good for certain wines and not for others. And lately, the Eastern European countries have come up with some oaks themselves from Bulgaria and Hungary and places like that. But oak is the only one that works. So actually the art of making wine, I like to say it's really blending of different age oaks and different age, and this, every barrel is different, imparts a different flavor. So the making of the wine is really the blending process is really the most important one, assuming that you have good wine to begin.
Right. You have been the owner from the beginning?
No, my wife and I bought this place in 1999. So we have been here 12 years.
Okay. Is this a picture of you and your wife on your website?
Yep.
With your dog? Oh, there. See, I got the advantage. I can see what you look like.
I didn't put my kids on the website. So I consider my dog my
There you go. Let's see, I was going to ask. Oh, your opinion, your feelings of the government, the state of New York government, are they good, bad, indifferent? You wish they dropped dead?
Of course they're bad. We really, you know, we are in New York, and it's only 90 miles to New York City. Nothing is cheap around here. The state of New York really does not, nor the state nor the federal government subsidize any of our production. And sometimes we are considered to be a little bit on the expensive side. Which I don't think is so, because our quality is so very good. And the problem is that people compare us with countries that make a lot of wine and their government subsidize their exports, like, just to name a few, Australia, Chile, and those kinds of places. But here in New York, life around here, I like to consider myself a farmer, but this is truly a gentleman farmer kind of situation. We need to spend a lot of money to make wine. So.
Oh, yes. Everywhere does. It's the old saying, how to make a small fortune in the wine business.
I heard
start
that
with a large fortune. Yes, that's...
I heard that thing.
Yeah, everybody knows that one. Well, I'm looking at some of your wines here. Your Allegra, late harvest Chardonnay. That sounds very interesting.
That is something we came up with. It's one of our invention about 5 years ago. And Allegra is my daughter's name. And when she was 16, she asked us that we name a wine after her. So instead of giving her a sweet 16 party at a winery, which is not a very good idea,
yes.
We made a wine her honor. And that lasts for a very long time. So, we have been doing it every year for the past, as I said, 6-7 years. So.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. That really does.
It is actually very good. It's a dessert wine, so it's the only dessert wine we make.
Oh.
So it's sweet, and it's delicious.
Made with the Chardonnay grape. That's just interesting.
Made with the Chardonnay grape. What we do is we save, say, a couple of 2 or 3 acres of Chardonnay. Instead of picking it, we leave them. We leave the grapes on the vine. Then eventually, before they go to bed, we freeze the grapes. And then that cuts down the yield by about 2/3. And the concentration of sugar that you can extract from those grapes is fabulous. So it's really a... expensive but great way to make wine.
Sounds great, Marco. Give me 1 second. Let me pass something on to listeners. If anyone's listening live right now, we are almost finished with the live broadcast. You can continue this on archive. If you're listening archive, then you're going to stay with us. But the live program will discontinue in about a minute here. We're going to ask Marco a few more questions here before he gets going. So if you are listening live, thanks for tuning in tonight. Jump over to the archives, listen to us on archive. Marco, the I noticed also you have olive oils. These all from Italy.
Olive oil happens to be from Calabria in Italy, and is my sister's farm. We are the only customer outside of Italy that they sell to. So I sometimes do olive oil tastings. Just like we do with wine, I have a friend that has different olive oils, and we compare olive oils. Any gimmick to bring people in, you know.
Oh wow! How do you taste olive oils? You don't have a little cup. What do you do?
We have a loaf of bread, and we cut it in slices, and the customers can dip it in the olive oil, and they can taste the difference between two different olive oils. This happens to be a virgin cold-pressed olive oil, and so there is a lot of varieties of olive oil, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
We also make what we call olive schiacciate, which is a mashed, really smashed olives where the pits is removed, and we marinate whatever is left, which is the meat of the olive, with other spices and things like that. And if you want a treat, let me know.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. That really does.
It is delicious. They marinate in their own olive oil. It's fabulous.
That would be the type that you wouldn't mix it in anything. That would be the type you would use for a salad dressing just by itself.
Salad dressing, pasta, sauces, you name it.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, you use a toothpick and you eat them all day long.
Yeah, and that's just what we need.
your
wine club, you have a wine club. Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
We have a wine club that it's in its second year. We have many members now. We have over 200 members in one year, so we are doing very well with that. The way it works is they get a heavy discount up front, and they give us the money to become members, and every 3 months we ship them an assortment of wines of our... We have different levels of membership, but basically whatever level they want, that's the wines that we are going to ship them. It's working fantastic.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that.
Because we have members in Florida and things like that.
You can ship down here to Florida then?
In Florida to consumers, if the consumer comes here and places the order here, we can then ship to Florida, yes.
I see. Oh.
There are a couple of states that don't allow us to ship, period, but some of them allow us to ship, provided the purchase was made here at our location.
I see. Again, we're going back to government rules and regulations on that.
My goodness. let's not start on that.
Yeah, definitely. Are you open year-round, or is the winter time?
Year-round. In the winter, January through April, we close sometimes on Tuesday, sometimes on Wednesday, because during the week we get absolutely no traffic. But otherwise, we are open 7 days a week, except for those 3 months, and every day.
I see. Mike, you have any questions for Marco here?
No, I'm ready for a road trip, actually.
Yeah.
I'll be. Let me know. I'll be happy to take care of you.
We'll keep that in mind, yeah. Well, Marco, thank you. I'm sorry, Mike, you had something?
Yeah, we just need to make sure we get address and contact information. You're on Facebook, and any kind of contact information you can give us.
My name is Marco Borghese, and my wife and I own this place called Castello di Borghese. The physical address is 17150 Route 48. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 957, and we are in beautiful sunny Catshog in New York, 11935.
And phone number and email and Facebook
email,
and everything?
Email, you can, for the website is castellodiborghese.com, or if you want to make it simpler, borghesevineyards.com, and that will give all the contact information, our phone number, and ways to order wine online and things like that.
So for me in Florida to order wine from you, it's not possible to do it online. I have to go to where you're located.
You can do it online.
Okay, that part I misunderstood then, because I thought there was something that
There is a couple of states that don't allow us to do that.
Okay.
I think Illinois is a problem, and I think Virginia is a problem. But most states are reciprocal in the sense that they let New York wines in there if New York lets their wine, and we of course let everybody's wine in this state. So.
Okay. Okay.
just to have more available stuff, you know.
Right. Okay.
You are on Facebook, aren't you?
We are on Facebook. You click on the Facebook image, I think it gets you to our Facebook page.
Oh. Yeah, they're on Facebook and on Twitter, it looks like. I see the Twitter link on there. So, yep, it's definitely for all the information, contact information, visit the website and see the great pictures of your vineyard and everything. It looks wonderful.
The best part is the dog, don't you think?
Yes, the dog is nice. That dog still alive?
The dog is it's second generation, same breed.
Wow.
Second generation, and this dog is great.
Yeah. The reason I asked is so many people put pictures of their dogs up there, and the pictures are like 10 years old. And so you never know.
We update.
Oh, very good. Well, Marco,
my wife would kill me if I put an old picture on.
Yeah, I know. I've got one of those too. Yeah, not old picture, wife. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate it. Thank you. You did well. You were trying to say you want to do well, and that Anne Marie, your wife, would do better.
My wife is great. You would have to cut her off. With me, you have to ask me questions. That's the only difference.
Well, you did very well tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and best luck to you. And if we're ever in New York, we definitely will stop by and visit Castello di Borghese.
Borghese.
Okay.
Castello di Borghese.
Borghese, Italian. Castello. What's Castello? What is that?
Castello is... Castello, you know all the French, they have those chateaux.
Right.
Chateau in Italian, you say Castello, same thing.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Castello means house of Borghese, like those fancy French chateaus, you know.
I see, okay. Or Casa Excellent. Del Sol or something for Spanish. Yeah.
Well, our way of trying to be fancy.
Yeah. It worked. Well, again, thank you very much. Best of luck to you. And if we're ever in New York, we'll definitely stop by and visit you.
Thank Absolutely. You. Keep in touch. Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thanks for being on Absolutely. With us.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye now.
Wow, very cool. Very,
that was fun.
Very,
yeah.
Yeah, very very interesting with Ron earlier, Ron Gerler, and Marco. Fantastic. It was very cool. It's what? Yeah, I just connected with them on Twitter also.
Yeah, Marco Vargheza, Italian.
Yes.
Vargheza. Yeah.
Very Italian, yes.
Yes. He was fun, yeah.
Yeah,
he didn't want
cool.
to be on the program. He told me he didn't want to be on the program. You know, my wife was the one that talks. And I said, I want you on. I said, I can't get a hold of her. I said, can I get a hold of her? No, she's out of town. I said, well, then you come on. You know, maybe we can reschedule her. I said, why don't you go? He said, okay. Okay. Yeah, but he did good. He did, you know.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Really, really good. so he kind of fought him to get him on the air, but that's
yeah,
good.
But he did a good job when he got on, so.
Okay.
All right.
Let's see. You have this weekend is the 20th, Saturday? Yeah.
30th.
The 30th. What am I thinking? No, I thought that was the no. You have
August
20th. Was,
it is August
20th. Oh, that's
20th
right. The 30th.
Special event. The 30th. The
30th. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know where. I thought that was said. What did I say? 30th? No.
You
anyway.
Said August 20th, we have a special event. We need to start talking about that, too. It's a special fundraiser put on for the American Cancer Society. We have a group of ladies that are going to be coming up. They're going to do some silent auctions. They're going to have vendors. They're going to do everything. All proceeds from that event will go to the American Cancer Society. So it's going to be a good event. August the 20th. It's going to be from 5 to 8 in the evening, so it's not going to be hot sun. Anyone out there, mark your calendar. Definitely come by and, you know, be a part of it. It's all for a good cause. We're donating the winery space and everything to it, so we'd like to see everyone come out for that. And then this weekend.
Yes, this weekend is... I'll go ahead and run the ad. We'll be back in 1 minute and 15 or so seconds, give or take.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And I just...
Very good.
I just noticed you have, and what a great combination, you have Deborah, who's going to be there with, she's with Sweets by Deb Fong, and she's going to have some wonderful desserts. What a great opportunity to sit underneath those oak trees you have out there at the one of the tables and have a nice dessert and drink a nice, I'd drink actually a bottle, but drink a nice glass of wine. So, That's the only problem I find with your wine is once you start drinking, it's like, you know what, let me have another glass. And I know that, you know, maybe it's not the healthiest thing to do, but it's absolutely delicious and you can't stop. So, but, you know,
enjoy life. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So, August 20th, then you have the event. We'll talk about that more next week. And what is our topic next week? We're still in New York.
We are still in New York. We are going to travel away from Long Island and on up. I think the next area that is close to Long Island, just a little bit up, is going to be the Hudson Valley, AVA in Hudson Valley area. This is just north of New York. I'm looking, even as I talk, I'm trying to find what the AVA says here, and I'm that's why I'm delaying, because I got bunches of paper. Hudson River Region AVA is what it's called. And Hudson River Region AVA. So we're going to be doing the Hudson River Region, and it's the Hudson River in eastern New York. It is actually the home of the oldest continuously operating winery in North America. The Brotherhood Winery is out of this area. That was originally established in 1839, and it's still being operated. If I ever have anyone come from New York, they always, always mention the Brotherhood Winery. So I will. If I can't get a hold of someone from Brotherhood, then I'll tell you all about it next week. So we're going to be doing Brotherhood and a lot of others from the Hudson River area, and that will be our topic next week in New York.
Great. Okay. Let me. I was just writing that down. I didn't know that. Brotherhood Winery, oldest in North America. Okay. Very cool. So anyway, we are almost, we're beyond 15 minutes later than usual. If you're, hopefully you're still listening to us on the archives. If not, you won't hear this. But thank you, everybody, for listening to us live and listening to us on the archives. And we definitely would like to know that how you like the program and what you would like to hear on future programs. If you have questions, if you have suggestions or anything, email the show at, let's see, your email address we're on for the show is all about
line 101.
101@gmail.com. Make sure it's @gmail.com. And also, if you want to get in touch with Florida State's Winery, and you can contact Ron there during regular business hours, I'm guessing, is 813-996-2113. And that's the number to call for Florida State's Winery, located on State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, about 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. Great location, great wines, and a very interesting show tonight. And thank you both, Ron and Ron Gerler and Marco, for appearing tonight. And it was very enjoyable. And Ron, as always, thank you for hosting and making this an enjoyable, entertaining, and informative show. And we'll see.
Thank you.
So we'll stop it.
Thank you for taking care of behind-the-scenes stuff. That's always important, too.
I'm looking at websites and what you do, too. I mean, when they're talking, I'm like, oh, let me check this out.
Yeah, I know. I do the same thing. Oh, that's
and
cool.
Yeah.
And then you notice every once in a while they'll stop talking, and I'll go, oh, wait a minute. Wait.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well.
Yep. Yeah. Oops. Where were we? That was interesting that I found this interesting that the other Ron brought up the HR 1161. Because we were talking about that before, and you know, everyone's thinking about it. So that was interesting.
Look, I haven't mentioned it in a while too. I need to start. You know, just if nothing else, be sure I just say we're against the HR 1161. Be sure to say that at the beginning of the show. You know?
Yeah. The following program is against HR 1161.
That's right. The views expressed on this is the views of the people on this show. Yeah.
Right. Yep. All right. We'll see everybody next week. Next Thursday is the day. Next week will be 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio / All About Wine. Listen to us live. Give us a call during the normal program show hours, and we'd love to hear from you. Ron, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all next Thursday. And have a great Wine Fest this Saturday. This will be great.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And everyone, thank you out there for tuning in. We appreciate it.
Yay. All right. Thank you.